try to inform the embassies in all the world and risking their lives. That's the whole story. It's a story about resistance, how people resisting in a kind of situation like this one.
Something your father did.
Yes, yes, and with a lot of risks.
And you're the Pope today.
Oh, I think he's a good Pope. It's a major change. It's surprising to listen to him, to read what he says about the Church and the change has to do. I think also the first time in the history of the Church, Catholic Church, that the Pope speaks about money and says money is not so important. Human beings are important. This is very new.
Which brings us back to your film, Capital, yeah. And it is airing now, all opening, premiering around the United States. We thank you so much, Costa Gavras, for being our guest for the hour. World-renowned Greek-French filmmaker. His films include State of Siege, Missing, Eden is West, the Academy Award-winning Z, as well as Missing, his most recent film, now just opening in the United States Capital. Opens here in New York October 25th and in Los Angeles and other cities on November 1st. That does it for our show. I'll be at Princeton University Thursday, 5 p.m. Check our website for details. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burford, Nicole Saramato, Nermi Shake, Steve Martinez, Honey Masood, Ravi Karatini, Dester, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodwin, Nermi Shake. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with host Lisa Loving. Today's guest is Leah Hunter with the Mental Health First Aid Project.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on KBOO
Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com.
It is 8:04 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, Open Minds, Open Doors, and Folk Time are premiering the Mental Health First Aid documentary. It's at the Bing Lounge this Friday night, and we are live in the studio with Leah Hunter. Leah, welcome.
Good morning.
What is your role in Open Minds, Open Doors? And tell us, what is mental health first aid? I'm saying, I don't know what it is, but I know we need it.
Yes, we do, don't we? Yes, that's clear. So I get the privilege of being the campaign manager for Open Minds, Open Doors. And we are an anti-stigma campaign talking about mental illness and drug addiction and how there's a lot of stigma around identifying and having a diagnosis. And so what we are focused on doing, Open Minds, Open Doors, is just that. Opening minds to open doors, removing the words like insane and crazy, and reintroducing words like mental wellness, a proactive word instead of like mental illness, which is more reactive to something. So we have a wonderful documentary that we have made with Mental Health First Aid that is provided out of Clackamas County. We are sponsored by Clackamas County, and that is just such a wonderful thing that we have some county behind us to help us spread this message. And so the documentary is about being a first responder. Just like CPR and first aid, we want those people around us in case there's an emergency, that something happens, someone chokes, there's a car accident, there are first responders. Well, we look at our physical wellness and we have to say we need to have mental wellness as well. And so having first responders to mental crisis situations is what mental health first aid is all about.
You mean all of us, everyday people?
Everyday people.
Given mental health CPR.
Mental health CPR. So you can be a first responder. And that doesn't mean that you're supposed to solve it or diagnose it. But that means if you see someone, maybe they've stopped eating, they're not showering, you work with this person, you started to notice different signs and symptoms that we talk about in the training, that you might be able to identify that and say to someone, hey, are you okay? And this is part of starting the conversation, right? Just caring for each other. So we are talking about Be the One. It's Mental Health Awareness Week, and we're talking about Be the One. Be the one who is the mental health first aid responder. Be the one that's there for someone and says, hey, I noticed things were going on. Are you okay? And open yourself up to that person and let them open maybe back up and help them through maybe a crisis situation. So this documentary was focused on youth and people who work with youth, because I feel that what I've been learning about mental health is that the onset happens in our late teens. And this is very important for certain things that are going on within the psyche or in the mind. But then we have eating disorders and we have other things that are happening maybe a little more preteen. So we kind of have different ages for men and women as they maturate to when they may have an onset of an episode, or maybe just their diagnosis maybe isn't clear and might come to the surface at this point. And so youth are really critical. They talk to each other. They have inner circles. They really know what's going on with one another before a lot of us do. And so for them to be trained and have the ability to respond or know that they have a peer in their school or maybe at a youth leader that they can reach out to, that is what this training, Mental Health First Aid Youth, is about. So this documentary was made by Neely Yosha, and she's a wonderful filmmaker here. She did a project with Inside Out. Her parents were some of the first anti-war filmmakers in Israel. She's from Israel. And so she has a very deep social activist background with her film work. And it's been such a pleasure to work with her and have her viewpoint about mental health first aid and youth, because she tends to work with a lot of youth.
Mm. You're rocking my world, Leah Hunter. Like, why did this take so long? I know that there are some people who feel as though specifically church congregations of different kinds can also be that first aid thing. And yet I know some people that are very unsatisfied with the situations that they found themselves in a spiritual group like that. which is amazing. So callers, look, I'd like to hear from you. I bet there's a lot of people listening that have been in a mental health first aid, first responder situation. Like, what happened? Also, I know people who are grappling with mental health issues that have needed help from people. Mm. What have happened? What do you need? Right. So we'd love to hear your insights on the mental health first aid. We've also touched on this issue of labeling. That's definitely something that our listeners for this show care about a lot. What does it mean when people throw down these words that stick to you? And some of these words, actually, like words around mental illness or what have you, they stick in your medical records and they follow you around for decades, whether they were legitimate or not in the first place. So we'd love to hear people's stories about mental wellness. Let's say that. And of course, the number is 503-231-8187. We do have a caller. We've got Sean on the phone. Sean, what's going on with you?
Hey, good morning. I've been in mental health treatment for many years. The most significant was probably a four-month hospitalization when I was 15, and I've noticed some real changes over the years. That was 1987, and as much as I applaud the anti-stigma work, it seems like there's a lot of symbolic things taking place rather than substantive things. Like, just for example, I don't really care if there's, you know, a lot of stigma surrounding mental illness so long as there's more inpatient beds available for the mentally ill. You know, we keep having these outbursts of violence, and I realize the vast majority of people with mental illness do not commit acts of violence.
Yes.
But, you know, instead of having more beds for the mentally ill, we have these anti-stigma campaigns. And so it concerns me that we're just having symbolic action rather than real funding put towards opening more psychiatric beds and, you know, doing something really, you know, serious about addressing this problem.
Thanks. Check it out, Sean. Thanks for calling, Sean. I'm going to freak you out now, and I'm going to say three little words, and they're called Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
Under Obamacare, whether you like it or not, on paper, I will say, now the insurance companies are required to provide mental health and drug addiction treatment, whereas before they were not. And now I'm saying on paper because we don't really exactly know how this is going to roll out, but that's money, that's cash on the nail, and people may not be able to afford it, right? We don't know exactly how that's going to play out, but Sean, I hear his point. He's like, why are we talking about the words, show me the money?
Mm-hmm.
And I respect that. I can you talk about that a little bit, though? Now, you are talking, specifically, we are talking about an event that this organization is doing to actually educate people on literally how to intervene. That's a little different even than just talking about language. So I want to really nail that one because that's fascinating me. This documentary about how you can be the first responder or help steer someone in the right direction that's having a mental health crisis. Now, that's something very specific that we're talking about. But talk a little bit, Leah Hunter, about why is the stigma a big issue? Why does it matter?
Well, stigma is a big issue, and it matters because it's kind of like Obamacare and the Affordable Health Act. Did you see the Jimmy Kimmel Live thing they did where people
People hated Obamacare, but they thought the Affordable Care Act was a good idea, but they're the same dang thing.
But they're the same thing. And so someone put millions of dollars behind Obamacare and an anti-stigma campaign towards that. And so kind of in this other venue, we can look and see how words are powerful, that people aren't living, they don't have schizophrenia. They live with schizophrenia. They have episodes and moments, but that person is not always hearing voices and is not always a schizophrenic. This is moments that they're having. So understanding those concepts too, that people are living with their mental illness, they're working towards mental wellness, is just like having cancer. If I have cancer, except for with cancer, you might receive more care. You might get a casserole. Julie Fast was talking about a woman who writes about bipolar. I found that very interesting that her comparison was that when you're diagnosed with a mental illness, you don't get a casserole. People don't come to take care of you. They stigmatize you. Well, that person's crazy. This person's that. But that person should still get a casserole. They probably need their community more than ever at that moment. And that's what we're talking about with the words. By talking about the words and what they mean and that their diagnosis, you don't say someone's oh, you're a cancerian walking around with cancer. No, you're a person living with cancer, and you're going to beat it. You're going to get recovered, right? You're going to find recovery. Well, that's the same thing with somebody with bipolar or anxiety. At the event, Dave Mowry is from Stand Up for Mental Health, and he is bipolar, and he talks about how he could never publicly speak. He couldn't even really go into a room and speak with people, but he started doing comedy, and now he does stand-up comedy in front of hundreds of people because that was his way to talk about the words and make jokes and make kind of fun of a very serious subject about how these words were putting him in boxes and keeping him kind of isolated and alone. And when he found the power of his words and he could make jokes and make comedy out of them and create laughter, he found this roadway, and now he's thriving and very successful, but he's still living with his bipolar. Mm. So these are different ways in which we can see people are stigmatized and how these words are applied, and then they stick to you, like you're saying, maybe with your medical records or even in your family. If you've, you know, have episodes and then you're recovered, a lot of the times it's our friends and family who remind us that there's something wrong or maybe something going on. And then friends and family also support on that other end of saying, you know, we don't want people saying these things about our brothers, our sisters, our loved ones, our husbands. These words, crazy, insanity, a lot of these words that are very dated also.
Right. I also, I want to add that in my own family, someone close to me in the past 5 years has been diagnosed with an extreme anxiety disorder that also is linked with a mental health diagnosis. And everyone in the family now, we're all coming to grips with and learning about how actually we all have a little piece of this mental health, what would have been described as a mental illness, to be honest with you. We all have a piece of it. And it took years for the one person in my family that suffered from it the most to have the courage to speak out about it, because she assumed that there was something wrong with her, and she didn't want everyone to know, and she didn't want to, and that's someone close to me in my own family, right? So I hear what Sean's saying. Sean's saying, you know, come on, put some real solutions on the table. Mm-hmm. I hear that. I just want to say from my own experience, the words matter when it comes to individuals that realize that there's something different happening in their heads and they don't want to be stigmatized. They're ashamed. That's the word I'm looking for. Ashamed. There's a shame factor that happens with mental illness that you don't see with cancer, as you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I have another friend that's dealing with cancer. She's hospitalized right now, and she's deeply Facebooking everything that's happening to her. And she's getting, she's just being destroyed by it. It's completely upsetting to her, but she's open enough to put all that's going on her mind on her Facebook so that people can follow it. But I've never seen anyone do that with mental health. Actually, I don't see people doing that with menopause either. Mm-hmm. And menopause is a physical problem. It's a physical condition. It's like the opposite of adolescence, where your hormones are retreating on you. They're leaving as opposed to coming. And it also has mental components that that's impact me as I'm driving my motor vehicle down the road. You know, I actually have a sign in my car now that says no screaming. It's not working, but I have it. Anyway, these are deep conceptual waters. Right. We are talking about this amazing documentary that's going to be shown this Friday night. Okay. We are live in the studio with Leah Hunter. She is with Open Minds, Open Doors, and Folk Time. We need to talk about Folk Time a little bit. And this documentary Friday night at the Bing Lounge is Mental Health First Aid. I know there's people out there that are in our listening audience that care a lot about all of our neighbors and friends and family members who are in that spectrum of whether the mental health is working out or it's not working out. Mm. I know there's people who want to do something about it and don't feel like there's something they can do, but it looks like there is something they can do. And we'll talk about that documentary, what's in it, in a second, but we do have another caller. We have Harry on the phone. Harry, what's going on with you?
Fine. Yeah, I like to talk about a stigma. I used to work in the prison system here in Oregon, and most of the inmates were ostracized if they went to pill line or have any type of mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think that has a lot to do with it. Also, in the last few years here in Portland, we've had a few killings by the police of mentally ill people. And I think this program would probably be a good idea to kind of quell this if the, maybe the Portland police could get on board.
That's an interesting. Harry's putting some really bubbling pots on the table there. Thanks a lot for calling, Harry.
Okay.
I was corresponding earlier this week with a community organizer in the mental health community who was speculating about what Obamacare, what this Affordable Care Act coverage might mean for county programs. Right. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not hearing anybody talk about that, and I know that actually, Multnomah County's public health department is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, government entity anywhere on planet Earth. Multnomah County's public health, community health people, they do a lot.
Yes.
They see a lot. And now we're talking about actually Clackamas County Mental Health, which is supporting this program that Leah Hunter is here to talk about. But this new effort with the health insurance and the health care, it is groundbreaking. I'm going to say it again on paper. You know, as it's been rolled out, it could be really elegant, but it's going to be up to the people to make sure that it turns into whatever it is that the people want and or need. But Harry, the other bubbling pot he put on the table was the Department of Justice ruling on the Portland Police Department, which specifically mm-hmm. found a pattern of oppressive behavior against people who are in mental health crisis situations. So, Harry, that big one there. And, you know, Leah, we do have a couple callers, but Leah, talk a little bit about, like, in your vision of how all of us can actually help out if we can, if we're empowered with the right information. How could everyday people maybe... And I don't want to put this on anyone, but how could we impact like the extreme, the few extreme violent situations we see when people are in mental health crisis? Like, what is the role of everyday people in defusing that?
So I'm glad that Harry put that on the table. Folktime, who manages the Open Minds, Open Doors campaign, was given that opportunity and the privilege to do that because Folktime itself is very innovative in what we're doing. We do peer support. So
peer support in three different locations, right? You're in Oregon City, Portland, and...
In Northeast Portland, right on Cooch Street.
Right.
So we have Oregon City, Sandy. And then
Sandy,
we
right.
have our Northeast, which is our
home base. I like
that
base. About you. Oregon City, the city of Sandy, and Portland. Those are, you know, these are urban centers that we don't always pay attention to, but go ahead.
Yeah, rural areas definitely, yeah. like Sandy, have a really hard time creating and even finding community to relate to. And that's one of the things we do at Folktime with peer-to-peer support and creating socialization programs. So peers are our consumers. They maybe have been hospitalized and they've come to a point in their recovery where they're ready to help others. And Folktime can employ them. And then they work like at Centerstone, a crisis center right on 82nd Avenue where people walk in. And if they want to speak with somebody who has bipolar or someone who's experiencing the same thing as them, there's a peer there with bipolar that they can come and speak with. And we match them up. So that's one of the different things that we're doing, going back to the first caller, kind of asking, you know, we can't really, respite is a huge issue. Having enough beds is a huge issue. But Folktime is saying, we care about your medication. We care that you have a diagnosis. We don't need to know what that is. You don't have to tell us. Just come and be part of our socialization programs. All you need is a referral. And we have people who have been, one woman was being hospitalized weekly. And within the 9 months that she's been at Folktime, she's only had one hospitalization. So we do have evidence-based research that shows that peer-to-peer services work. Going back to what can we do with the police, Folktime has been sitting down with the police in reflection to the death of like James Chassie, and saying, let's open these conversations. These are volunteers from the police department coming and saying, what you're doing is working. How is it working? And so we've been able to have some open dialogue about the investigation into the police. And this is one of their proactive ways to saying, how do we understand people with mental differences better? Mental health first aid is another way that we're trying to work with law enforcement to say, if more people were trained in mental health first aid, including officers in the adult version, that may help them identify and be able to relate better to people with mental differences. Once again, everyone has a little mental difference. That's another word that we're trying to use instead of mental illness. We're just different. It's a slight difference. So in the prison system, the other thing that's the boiling pot there is that we don't have enough beds and respite. And so the prison has become kind of the new, not kind of, it has become
the new housing. State mental hospital, let's put it like
that's
that.
That's right, exactly. And so we really, really believe that getting our law enforcement trained and able to identify and react with more kindness, and working better with social service systems that are supposed to be identifying and saying, hey, James was off his meds. In that documentary, if you watch, she identified him to the police, and they still...
You mean the James Chassie documentary, yeah. Alien Boy.
Alien Boy.
Really recommend people go see that if you yes. have the chance. It's an amazing documentary. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. It is 8:24. Today, we're live in the studio with Leah Hunter. She's with Open Minds, Open Doors, and the program called Folk Time. And they are premiering a documentary at the Bing Lounge this Friday night, Mental Health First Aid. And that's at the Bing Lounge. We'll give you the address at the end of the hour, Friday, October 11th from 5 to 7 p.m. And people, the phone lines are open. You know, have you been in a mental health first responder situation? Or have you needed a first responder? We would love to hear from you. 503-231-8187. We have Eric on the phone. Eric, what's on your mind today?
Yes, I was misdiagnosed over the years with a borderline personality disorder, and that was corrected in 2008 when I had a massive neuro psych evaluation up in Tacoma.
Okay.
And it was found that I have mild Asperger syndrome, which kind of mimics some of the trace of borderline, but the borderline has been just a death knell as far as employment records and things like that, and I need to know how you erase that wrong evaluation.
Wow, Eric, I don't know the answer. And Leah, she's like, she doesn't know either. Eric, you know what? We're going to dial that in. We're going to dial that in and see if we can find out and bring that back for a future show. But how are you feeling now? Are you feeling better?
Well, I'm homeless now. I've been living in my car for about 18 months. I was locked out of Portland State University on a mistake they made in my registration. They locked me out of student housing and basically took all my stuff, and I've been in my car ever since.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear about that, Eric.
Yeah.
I'll see you Friday at Bing.
Right on, man.
Yeah, it's free. So just so everyone knows, the Bing Lounge event is a free event because we really want people
to come
and participate. And all you have to go is kink.fm. The keyword is O-M-O-D, OMOD. Put that in there and you register, and it's free. So when you come, you'll be pre-registered. You'll be on the list.
Thanks for calling, Eric. And, you know, just briefly, there is another caller, but I wanted to say the other burning issue when we're looking at the Affordable Care Act and we're looking at mental wellness, people that are incarcerated, right? I was at this big event in another state like last week learning about the Affordable Care Act. And I was asking these people, they're advocates, right, for the act. And I'm like, well, how does it impact people that are incarcerated? And they said, well, people that are incarcerated already get medical care. And I was like, meh. I think you're incorrect there. So as people are thinking about mental wellness, mental health, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, keep your eyes on the prison system, because those people are not getting care. I'm not even speculating. I'm putting that out. I think that we all know that the people that are incarcerated are not getting medical care, including the gentleman who was released last week after being wrongfully convicted and died 48 hours later in New Orleans. He had suffered from cancer.
Yeah,
in prison
liver
and
cancer.
Liver cancer. And the attorney, Lynn, who had been involved with the terrorism prosecutions, she also in New York, why can't I think of her last name? She is in prison and she's dying from cancer, and she's trying to get them to let her out so that she can actually get treatment of any sort. So, I mean, when we're looking, comparing cancer with mental health diagnosis, it really does resonate. I mean, people who have mental health problems probably are not going to be rehabilitated or anything like that while they're incarcerated. And we have another caller. We have Elliot on the phone.
I'd like you to speculate. A report was recently publicized by OPB that Apparently, Portland has a suicide rate that is 4 times higher than the national average, possibly especially high in adult white males. And why that could be, is it who is attracted to come here, or what, how the social relations are structured here, or how the mental health system is working here? I just like a comment, and I'll hang up.
Darling, I really appreciate you bringing that up.
Sure.
So,
I'll listen.
Thank you. This was a study that the Portland Police Bureau put out. Mm-hmm. Actually, I see the Portland Police. You know what? We sometimes we hate government, but as we're seeing with the so-called federal shutdown, there's so much of it that, of course, the federal government's not completely shut down, right? There's so much of it that you can't shut it down. Portland Police Department is actually a big mosaic of stuff and people doing things, and you can demonize the entire department, but I guarantee you that there's people in there with screwdrivers and they're trying to make it work, right?
Yep.
So, the Portland Police Bureau, now that they're so on the hook with the Department of Justice, they did their own study about the suicide rate. And now I have to put this out. There was a factual error when that study rolled out. And the original study, the original reporting said that Portland's suicide rate was 4 times higher than the national average. But the actual statistical data says that Portland's suicide rate is 30% higher than the national average. And there were corrections that went out on that on OPB and other places too, just so that you know. But there's considered to be, dude, an international epidemic of suicide.
Mm-hmm.
People are researching it. In our state, actually in the United States, around all over the United States, for I feel as though at least a generation, maybe longer, probably longer, it's white males that kill themselves at a higher rate. And they're more successful at it because they use guns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That to me, that's always been the fascinating other end of the Lincoln Log about race and racial disparities, right? Because usually we're talking about specifically African American community suffers more than white community on this whole array of things. But suicide is not one of those things. And so a lot of people have speculated about why so many white males kill themselves, right? But the more recent statistical information, the New York Times has some fabulous reporting on this, is that all over the world, communities of color, well, what we would describe as communities of color, are starting to catch up with that white rate. So with this report that the Portland police did, they're showing that the African American suicide rate is climbing too. And now that's something we had not seen before. Okay. So when we, thank you for bringing that up, Harry, about suicide, because as we're talking about relative mental health, we're talking about mental wellness. We started out talking about youth mental health and how, schizophrenia specifically becomes diagnosed. It manifests later, you know, later in childhood, or you'd say in early adulthood.
Yeah.
When we're talking about mental health, I mean, we're talking about a spectrum that every single solitary man, woman, and child in this country is going to go in and out of that spectrum of health versus lack of health. I just have to say that, Leia Hunter, like when you do your work, who are the people that come to you?
All kinds of people gravitate to me. I have a Open Minds, Open Doors isn't just a campaign for me. It's actually part of my life's journey. My mom died July 1st, and she died of cancer. She was undiagnosed with depression for many, many years, and then finally got some help and didn't like the Prozac, couldn't stay on her meds, and fell back off her meds.
Side effects. All these horrible pharmaceuticals have side effects.
Such horrible side effects. And so my mom, she liked her bottle of Wild Turkey and her marijuana cigarettes much better. And so she, you know, her depression got worse and worse and worse. And as she started to face ageism and a lack of education, my mom barely graduated high school. She became homeless and lost her health care and lived with me most of my adult life on and off, and had a serious problem with alcoholism due to her depression. And sometimes the alcohol would help, and sometimes it would just make her so much more sad. And I grew up my whole life wondering, what was wrong with me? What was wrong with me? Why didn't my mom ever give me advice? Why couldn't she engage me? Like, she was always proud. I was a 3-sport athlete, a really good student. I wanted out of poverty. I wanted out. And so I worked. I would get up 5:30 in the morning and go to bed at 11 at night, just working my whole junior high and high school career to get an education. And it broke my heart in so many ways when I got older to realize that she suffered so much. And it broke my heart for myself that the whole time that I thought something was wrong with me was something that was just wrong with our family. You know, my family has a deep history of abuse and drug addiction. And I get to be that woman in my family that says, the line stops here. I'm going to be the one to make the change. Mm-hmm. And you know me. You know my story. And that's why I feel so privileged to have this campaign and talk about the love I have for my mother and all the people that I see suffer, not just my mom. I have other members, my sister, you know, that suffer, and everyday people that suffer. And people really gravitate to me because I'm not a politician. I'm a person. And I have a story, too. And I'm so open to listening to them and wanting to be their words. I want to be the message. Mm-hmm. I want to deliver a message. I'm just a person. This campaign is touching the lives, like you said, of pretty much everyone we know at one point in our life. We all fall in and out of mental wellness. We come in and out of mental wellness, just like we all get colds.
I have to put this out here, and this is a really wacky story. Okay, this is wacky. This is UFO wacky. This is Sasquatch wacky. I have this horrible relationship with Clint Eastwood's wife. I'm putting that out. I went to high school with her, Dina Ruiz, right? She criticized my clothes. She was such a snotty little
mean person.
I almost said something that would have required me to hit the dump button. I just, you know, she was horrible. And she married Clint Eastwood. I just went, what? But this is the thing. Okay. Dina Ruiz, she marries Clint Eastwood. She becomes Dina Eastwood. Well, their marriage has broken up. Okay. Mm. Over the past year, like a year ago, they separated. Mm. And, now I'm married to a cowboy. My cowboy is better than her cowboy. Like, I always had this attitude all these years. And I'm sure she doesn't even remember who I am. No right. question about that. Okay. But I was just reading where this year, so a year ago, she had a reality television show called, you know, Living Like an Eastwood. I don't know what it was called. It was a reality show about her family, her life. Mm. But it was canceled after like two episodes. Clint split from her. It just destroyed her life.
Yeah.
And then I read where earlier this year she was hospitalized for depression. Mm. And I had to stop, shut up, go get a great big ladder and climb down off of my attitude. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
This woman, I'm serious, she's a billionette. Mm-hmm. And she's hospitalized for depression.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that surprised, that really gets me about when we're talking about mental health. It really impacts everybody.
It
like
crosses
everybody.
Economic lines.
Age lines.
That's right.
Economic, racial lines.
Racial lines, all of them.
It's for sure that there are some communities that are disproportionately impacted. I am definitely going to say that. And it's not the billionaires. But anyway, so this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We are live in the studio with Leah Hunter of Open Minds, Open Doors, and Folk Time. Those groups are premiering the Mental Health First Aid documentary this Friday at the Bing Lounge. It's Friday night from 5 to 7. It's an early night, so you can go out and party or do whatever. Have fun with your family after, so a lot of people can be there. We'll talk about the address of the Bing Lounge. But this is what we're talking about this morning. It is an amazing opportunity that people might have to get some kind of inkling on how we can support Dina Ruiz, Dina Eastwood. Obviously, she did not have the support she needed in her billionaire family. I'm putting that out. So yeah. Anyway, so we have a bunch of callers. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Nina on the phone. Nina, what's going on?
Hello. Can you hear me?
We absolutely can. Oh, yes, ma'am.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank you so much for having this subject. And KBOO is just a miracle of a radio station. Thank you so much for the work that you do.
Thank you.
I have a son who's 24 years old who, sorry, I'm going to try not to cry.
Breathe,
he's absolutely
breathe,
brilliant.
Yeah.
He's beautiful. And he suffers from paranoid schizophrenia.
Mm.
And our family has been plagued with this for about 6 years. He has been suffering for 6 years. And I've been listening to bits and pieces of your program. I haven't heard all of it, so I don't know specifically what the focus is, but I can share with you a little bit of our experience, or if you have any questions you want to ask me about what that is, or I don't have specific questions. I would love to get involved in some other ways in a larger community to help, you know, other families that are suffering from this. But I can tell you that the first thing is awareness, is people getting rid of the stereotypes that are associated with mental illness, getting rid of the shame. And as everyone knows, I think, you know, the mental health system is so completely broken. Like many cases, my son ended up in the criminal justice system due to, you know, essentially no real act of his own. Schizophrenia is a hideous disease, and I don't really know what else to say, other than that if you're driving along, because I know your focus was how can the average person help. If you're driving along your car and you're seeing huddles of homeless people in the corners, or you're walking along the street and somebody's asking you for money, please don't be judgmental. Don't be harsh. And I know that sounds mamsy-pamsy, but I myself used to think, oh, well, they're there because of their own choices, you know, their drug and alcohol abuse, or which isn't necessarily a choice either, but the majority of homeless people, my understanding now, is mental illness. It's untreated, which is treatable, which is so frustrating. Mm-hmm. In the wealthiest country, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, and we have all this amazing access to science and medicine, and we can't seem to get help for these people. Our family's flabbergasted. Mm-hmm. We don't even know where. At this point, we're not really sure where to turn. We've been up and down through several different systems. The mental health system has, we perceive it to have betrayed us, to mm-hmm. fail us. And right now, my son is missing. We don't even know where he's at.
Oh, no.
So he's homeless, has very little resources. He does have SSI. We're grateful for the disability payments that he's able to receive. Mm-hmm. But we're, for ourselves, proponents of, you know, coerced medication and treatment, which I know that's a whole other controversial subject. But my son isn't even aware of the fact that he's sick.
Yes.
And he's so incredibly sick at this point that we don't know if he's going to survive it. I mean, I've seen him emaciated from just not feeding himself for weeks.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we've seen all of it. He's been institutionalized multiple times. Mm. It's kind of, you know, his choice whether he takes medication or not. And I've been flip-flopping back and forth. Well, that's okay for him to just maintain a certain state of differentness. You know, he just thinks differently. He lives differently. The problem is that now the disease has deteriorated to the point where he's now violent. And so, not towards strangers, but, you know, towards people that he is close to. And he is a danger to himself. I mean, he's not able to even get his basic needs met. It's just, it's a harrowing experience. And I see through the last 5-6 years of going into all these mental institutions with my son, I don't know what it is, but there's scores of young people like himself. These are young, beautiful, brilliant minds that are just wasting away. There doesn't seem to be any focused help, and I don't know what else to say other than that.
Nina, we love you.
Yeah, we love you, Nina.
Oh, thank you.
Here to support you. You're not alone.
Thank you for calling, and keep us in the loop. Let us know. So this event, actually, Nina, that we're talking about, it's this event this Friday that basically, I mean, to me, when I look at this Affordable Care Act and the Obamacare thing, I'm not the queen of Obama supporters. I'm not. Although I bet he's a really nice man, to be honest with you, which is, that matters to me. But the thing that's remarkable about the Affordable Care Act and what this administration has done is tried to turn the system on its head by including tons of incentives for proactive care. Yes. And one of the things that people don't know what's going to happen with the Affordable Care Act is what kinds of services are people going to use once they get access to insurance. Where we live in Oregon and Washington, because the federal government passed down for the next 3 years, they're passing down these grants to, they're like the Medicare expansion grants.
Exactly, yes.
So they're trying to, in good faith, I think, our state government is trying to hook people up with these services, because literally everybody loses with this broken system, especially
right.
the mental health system.
That's
and
right.
God, Nina, I just want to hug you right now. But it's to me, what is remarkable is thinking about how communities and how our street traffic is going to be impacted if families have access to medical care that includes a mental health and drug addiction component. To me, it's like the thing that's so heartbreaking about what Nina's talking about is that maybe the only way to address it is to try to get in front of it, right? And try to prevent it, people from dropping out of the system, or try to prevent people from not getting treatment. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But that's going to be so ugly. And there's absolutely, if that even happened, because this is on paper, again, I'm saying it again, it's on paper, mm-hmm. but it's like the potential for that is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. I feel as though, just the systemic reforms that the Affordable Care Act has already put into what insurance companies are supposed to be allowed to do could actually save lives on this. But people are still going to have to go and do it.
That's right.
No one's going to put people on one of those horizontal escalators and bring them into a system. People are still going to have to reach out for what they think they need. And at that, I don't know. People don't know what's going to happen. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with Leia Hunt. We're talking about this event that's going to be, it's a documentary that's going to be aired this Friday at the Bing Lounge called, it's about mental health first aid. And as Leia has talked about it, this is a movement. It's not just a movie or a concept or a program from somebody's county health department. This is a movement. And I mean, really, when you look at how many of our families are impacted, it staggers the imagination. And we have a couple of callers. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Marie on the phone. What's going on, Marie?
Yes, good morning. Lisa, can you hear me all right?
Yes, we sure can.
Okay, you all are the best. And quickly, I apologize, I did miss the first 10 minutes, but I heard that coming up events on Democracy Now, your topic. So the quick thing I have to contribute, and I was going to say this before the caller who just called in before that, I was going to say this, that many people do not know there is totally a link between schizophrenic symptoms and mercury fillings. And they can go to dentaltruth.com. There's a nonprofit, very inexpensive, not very colorful, scientific little journal that comes out twice a year, free of charge. There's all kinds of bibliography on that. There's videos. And people need to know, please do not let them put mercury fillings in your children. It can cause all kinds of problems with the pituitary gland in the endocrine system. The mercury does accumulate in the brain. It is totally linked to not only schizophrenia, but Alzheimer's as well.
Thanks, Marie. Thanks for calling.
And we You're welcome. Blessings, everyone.
You too. And we have another caller. Let's go to the second caller. We have Dennis on the phone. What's going on, Dennis?
Yes. I'm 75, and I'm retired now. I have sort of considered... I've had mental health issues most of my adult life, and probably before mm-hmm. that. And I've pretty much always considered myself defective. I never used that word until I listened to a program last week, very much like yours. I can't remember who the people were on that program, although I have their email address. I've tried to reach out, and that's the thing you have to do. And, this diagnosis and that diagnosis and never knowing really who I am. And I came to Santa Cruz, California, where my family was. And they had there, and I don't know whether they have these things, they formed a self-help group. There was there were a group of them. There was... a sort of a leader of the group, and she got people together, and there was some advertising in the community, and they got together and formed this organization called Mental Health Client Action Network, which had a president and officers, and they met, had a place where they could meet that the community gave them, and this was where these people could come together and talk about themselves and their diagnoses. And it was really interesting because a lot of people feel that they need to be listened to, and that they need to be often it's good to be listened to by their peers.
Awesome, awesome.
And then I came up here because it was too expensive to live in California, and so I'm in Portland now, and.
And you're looking for a self-help group. You're looking for a peer group that you can hook up with.
Well, good time. There's Folk Time, and you should come visit Folk Time because that's what we do. We do peer-to-peer services for veterans and peer-to-peer services for anyone with mental differences, as long as you have a referral. And you can find us at F-O-L-K.
F-O-L-K.
T-I-M-E.
Yes.
folktown.org.
Thank you so much for calling, Dennis. Really appreciate your call. It's folktime.org. Just like if you were going to go play banjos. I'm not judging.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you, Dennis.
But that is how Folktime started, the same way that Dennis was just talking about, a group of women and people that were concerned in the basement of a church. And so...
All right. You know, and I want to say this, too, and people didn't bring this up, but we often love to have on this show our pals from the Alzheimer's Organization of Oregon, Alzheimer's Association of Oregon. They have a ton of support groups, and there's all people of all ages are impacted by
That's
Alzheimer's.
Right.
It's
yes.
what they're finding. And that is alz.org/Oregon. They have tons of stuff. So I really want to just really help people to the Alzheimer's Association of Oregon. A lot of time at this point, one of the things that we've learned from our pals at the Alzheimer's Association of Oregon is that there's different kinds of dementia. I didn't even know that.
Yes.
Different kinds of dementia affect people differently, and it actually makes a huge difference. And so look for them too, and look for their services. So we have a couple more callers. Let's go back to the phone line. We have Joanne. Joanne, what's going on?
Well, I've been out most of the morning and just tuned in a short while ago. You know, I believe, like the law school system, the medical school system, they all have to be dismantled, but it's not going to happen. A new thinking and new ways of looking at people. And, you know, that's what the mental health system in this country, too, I believe. They have to be dismantled and think and look at people differently. But it's not going to happen because it's a capitalistic country and a military country, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But one thing I want to say, if anybody in this country is going to have a mental health movement, a new one, a better one, will you please at least include people like me that don't use computers and have telephone numbers? And
yes.
Another thing.
Yes.
Do not. I came near to doing it to myself years ago when I was young and married and desperate, but we didn't have $1,000. Don't. Electroshock, I don't care what the opinions are out there. I know it's wrong, just like medications. And maybe medications are good for a few, but that's not the way to look at a person who you want to believe is mentally ill. And thanks for the program, and I'll say goodbye.
Thank you for calling, Joanne. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, and we are live in the studio with Leah Hunter. She's with Open Minds, Open Doors, and also Folktime. They're premiering a mental health first aid documentary at the Bing Lounge this Friday night, October 11th, from 5 to 7 p.m. I have to leap sideways for a second and say, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, Richard Wolff, economist, writer, and professor, presents an extended commentary on how capitalism is working. I'm guessing some of you listeners have a few ideas about that on your own. At 9:30, we'll hear from local organizer and activist Tiffany Ayers about Bees and Seeds and World Food Day PDX this Saturday. It celebrates pollinators, seeds, small family farmers, and healthy local foods. Dude, heads up, today at noon, Multnomah County is having a global climate change press conference, and their analysis about what's going to happen in our region in the next generation or two is totally going to impact bees and seeds for sure. At 9:45, the super cool Don Merrill reports on how the ongoing government shutdown is affecting many of the agencies we depend on to keep workers, food, infrastructure, and financial regulations in place. Stay tuned for that. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary. 10:15 on Flashpoints, host Dennis Bernstein presents excerpts from a new documentary on the Nakba, the day of catastrophe for Palestinians. He's presenting a speech by Edward Said. Can you imagine? My husband is on his way to Palestine right now, and I'm sure that's going to work out just great. At 11 on The Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen discusses how to convert a lawn or a weed patch to a garden bed in about two easy steps. He'll have tips on how to plant garlic and cover crops. And the plant of the month is rootstock for grafting fruit trees. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a member? Go to the website and click on Donate Today. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in the studio with Leah Hunter. Open minds, open doors. We've got a phone call. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Michael on the phone. Michael, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, first of all, Lisa, you know, society is broken into two categories. You got your neurotics and you got your psychotics. And part of the reason why mental health is broken is because we have people with issues trying to solve other people's issues. They're bringing, you know, people in society drinking coffee. That's a neurosis. You got people with all type of hang-ups trying to solve other people with hang-ups. And that's why you have problems here. And so,
Michael, who's going to solve them? Who's going to solve the problems if it's not the people that are affected by them? Right?
Well, maybe maybe the problem can be solved. Not with the dynamics that exist in society. If it could be solved, it would have been solved.
So it's you're just like, saying give up. You're saying you got issues, you want to help people with issues, forget it. Just give up.
No, I'm not saying give up. I'm saying that before people can solve other people's problems, they must be realistic and look at themselves that they have problems themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like there are people, like in the medical profession, there are people that say that these type of conditions is hereditary in this race of people, so they don't go beyond what's normal because they say, well, black people is predisposed to have this kind of condition. Yeah. So they use racism in their analysis. It's just like the government shutdown right now. You know why the government is shut down? Because they know the people are complacent, that the people is going to let it happen, and they are letting it happen. That's what I'm talking about. Anyway, talk to you later.
Hey, Michael put a really hot pot on the table, and I could quibble with a bunch of things he said, but let's dig into that a little bit. Whenever Michael calls, I'm always agreeing with some and disagreeing with some. But, I mean, he put a lot on there. This issue of if you've got issues, you're trying to solve other people's issues. Talk about that a little bit. Just talk about that a little bit.
Wow, where do we start with that? I think that we all have issues. That's part of the human condition right now. And as a person who was a young child and now as a middle-aged woman, my issues and conditions have changed, right? As a young girl, mm-hmm. I had things, and as I had children. And so I'm constantly evolving. My human condition is something I'm constantly looking at, questioning, and trying to find my own solutions for. People... I think we all are flawed. Now, maybe that's the issue Michael's getting at, is that it's okay to say, I don't know. It's okay to say, I'm not okay. It's also okay to say that I have problems. That's part of the issue, right? That we have stigmas and we have labeling. We have all this that's sticking because, like he said, we're complacent. We're allowing it.
Right.
Well, you know what? I have depression. I'm not ashamed to say that. Right now, my mother's passed and I'm having depression. And sometimes it's hard to get out of bed or mm-hmm. these things. But I know in time that getting up and getting dressed and going to work is a good thing for me. Now, how do I help people when I have issues? It's by saying I have issues. People gravitate and want to talk about things because it's good to be open to that. Now, I do hear the feedback also that some people believe that their psychiatrists or their doctors have issues and that they're trying to solve their issues when they feel sometimes they go in and they're getting therapy and then they feel like they're giving therapy to a therapist. I've heard that as well, and I think that's what he's talking about. I don't know how to solve that problem, and I'm not sure what the answer is to that because that's not my field of study,
right.
And that's not the focus of my campaign. So I would have to refer to somebody who had more knowledge than me, maybe to more eloquently speak about how people are broken, trying to fix broken people.
And we are starting to run out of show, so I'm not sure if we're going to have time for any more calls. But my concern about that attitude, that if you're either neurotic or psychotic, which actually I can sort of see, like we've been talking about the spectrum, right? The relative health spectrum. But it's like my concern is that people who feel like they're not empowered to try to make their situation better. That's my biggest concern.
Right.
And people naturally stick together if, you know, to support each other. And I think that the work that Open Minds, Open Doors does is really important for that reason. And actually, Michael, watch out for the labeling, although whatever, that's fine. You know, we only have about 1 minute left, so we're not going to be able to get to the last caller. But I want to give the microphone back to Leah Hunter, and Leah Hunter, like in 1 minute, what do we need to know about the mental Health First Aid documentary. That's coming out this Friday.
So Mental Health First Aid is provided by Clackamas County out of Centerstone. The two women that facilitated it agreed to let us come in and make this documentary with youth. So we had youth and people that work with youth there. And this documentary is talking about how we can take this tool, like a CPR first aid training, a mental health first aid training, bring it into our businesses, bring it into our schools, bring it into our community to help us identify early assessment is the key.
And so we are talking about that documentary, Mental Health First Aid, at the Bing Lounge this Friday, October 11th from 5 to 7 p.m. That is it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Leah Hunter. Find out more about her work at folktime.org. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will hopefully be podcast on KBOO.FM by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Japanese Garden, celebrating its 50th anniversary with the Wakokoro Brothers with Masahiro Nitta, the three-string samurai on the shamisen, Wednesday, October 16th at the Portland Art Museum's Grand Ballroom. Tickets and information at pam.spotlightboxoffice.com.
This is KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 9:01 a.m. Coming up on Political Perspectives, Richard Wolff, economist, writer, and professor, presents an extended commentary on how capitalism is working. At 9:30, we'll hear from local organizer and activist Tiffany Ayers about bees and seeds and World Food Day PDX this Saturday. It celebrates pollinators, seeds, small family farmers, and healthy local foods. At 9:45, Don Merrill reports on how the ongoing government shutdown is affecting